first of all, congratulations on being chosen as SDM's Integrator of the Year.
No, thank you very much. That's a really big honor. When Alan told me that we were chosen, I couldn't tell you how excited I am. I mean, it's, you know, the biggest thing that could happen to you in the security space.
Great. Well, you've certainly earned it this year, and you know, we didn't have any problem convincing ourselves that this was your year. So,
thank you.
So you were named CEO in May of 2021. You know, why did you decide to take on this role at that time?
Well, I thought, I looked at the company profile, and after talking to Windpoint and the board, I knew that they wanted to grow this company fast in a very aggressive fashion. And I thought it would not only would be fun, but, you know, I knew we could do it, right? I knew we put the right team around it. I knew we could grow very fast, and we have. But again, it was more the fact that it was growth, and you know, we had a chance to start from a nice base and then just keep going from there. And the other thing too was I knew I was partnered with a very good private equity firm. Windpoint Partners is one of the premier firms to work with.
So what were your immediate goals for CTSI when you became CEO, and how do you feel that things have gone for the last 15 months in terms of what you wanted to do when you started?
Yeah, so my immediate goals were, one, get the acquisition pipeline going. That was number one. Number two was also to stabilize the business. And what I mean by that is they had gone through a ERP transformation just before I got on board. And they were like in the middle of the process and they had some problems. So at first it was really to stabilize that as well as grow at the same time. So we kind of had a dual focus, but we were able to bring in the right CFO, Sylvia Hernandez, who was able to help us stabilize the ERP. And again, it did not slow us down from growing.
So one of the things I know you're doing now is changing your name. Tell me what the new name is and why you're changing to this name.
We're changing to a name. The name we're changing to is Pavion. And the reason we're changing the name is, one, obviously the rebranding process. We wanted to make sure the name reflects the company that we've built. We also need to bring all the brands together under one, because you know, it really doesn't work to have 10 different or 12 different brands out there. We really want to have one. And again, Pavion tells a really nice story. It works really well with what we're trying to do. And again, it'll be a whole process of rebranding. I mean, so we're going to start by the parent company rebranding and then slowly roll that out to the businesses. But it'll be, you know, again, it'll be a whole process, because rebranding is disruptive, because you have to rebrand trucks. You have to do a lot with legal entities. So there is a lot to that piece. So we want to make sure we do it in a very controlled and the right way to do it.
Why Pavion? What does that mean?
Well, the reason we chose, let me talk a little bit about the process. The process was we hired a company called Hyperquake to help us. And they worked and they selected a few names for us to pick from. And quite frankly, so what we did was we sent that out to the leadership team to get some feedback. And it was not actually super well received, the names. So the good news is it's an iterative process. And so they took that feedback, they went back, and they did some more work, as well as we went out to the field organization and solicited names as well. Now, they gave their feedback as well. Then we sat down and we went through those hundreds of names and we said, okay, what are the names that resonate with our industry? Protection, speed, execution, whatever that happens to be. And so we shortlisted probably 5 to 10 names. Then what we did was I decided I wanted to go back out, not to a smaller group of the leadership team, but I actually wanted the whole company to weigh in on the company decision, because it's a very big decision. I want everybody to have a hand in choosing the name that we went with. And we went out to the team and they chose Pavion. And I'm glad we did, because again, the reason I wanted to get the team's input was because I wanted a real cross-section of folks rather than just senior managers who may think alike. I wanted everybody from all different age groups, ethnicities, what have you, different businesses to provide that feedback. So it was really important that we get the name right when we did it.
Your company, now Pavion, has gone from a typical, kind of a more typical integration company to, I guess, what I would call a super acquirer. When and why was it decided that you would pursue this more aggressive acquisition strategy?
Well, I mean, the right companies became available to us. And quite frankly, I would love to say we had a great strategy, but a lot of it was being opportunistic that these amazing names became available at the right time. So again, some of it was just, we happened to be at the right place at the right time. And then from there, we, you know, we put the strategy in place where we were going to be three separate business units and we were going to grow each one of those business units under an umbrella, but also separately. The other thing that enables us to do that I'm really excited about is cross-selling between the businesses. We have a really great program that Ralph DiGuardi has put together and a really strong pipeline where now we're able to take customers and products that we have in each of the different businesses and leverage them across all the other units. So, I mean, it's like it's 1 + 1 = 3. I mean, it's a really nice program and it's really paying dividends for us.
So you have acquired, by my count, is it 11 in the last 2 years?
Yes.
Okay. Correct. Do you expect this level of acquisition to continue? And if so, for how long? Or is there a point where you'll slow it down to kind of incorporate all these changes for a while?
So I would say we'll always be acquiring at a pretty good rate. That's why we have a dedicated integration and synergy team to help us integrate the companies without distracting the regular business. But we have a lot more room to grow. I mean, right now we're focusing on the West and the Midwest, as well as some international acquisitions. And we're just going to keep feeding and filling in areas that we don't have the geographic reach to serve our national and global customers. So that's really the key, is to now that we have a really good base, now we're trying to be more strategic about where we acquire the businesses. So if one of our top customers has a lot of business in Australia, we're going to look to acquire in Australia. I mean, You know, Portland, wherever it happens to be, that's how we're going to fill in the rest of our footprint. And sometimes we'll be very fast with a lot of acquisitions, and other times we may slow down. It just depends on what's available on the market, because I don't want to force anything. It's got to be the right fit. That's the other thing I would say, is we pick the right companies. We pick value companies, companies that we know will help us out in the future. So we are being very selective in the process. And again, if four companies become available at the same time that fit our needs, then we're going to go for all four. If it happens to be one in over 3 months, then we'll be a little slow. But we'll never slow down or speed up based on integration or synergies, because we have a dedicated team and we can handle as much as we need to.
You have accomplished in 1 year what many organizations, if not most, struggle to do in 20. And all of that in the midst of a pandemic and a supply chain crisis. Can you share what you think your secret is to accomplishing all of that?
Yeah, I would say a couple things. The first one is, to me, one of the things that's important is speed over perfection. And what I mean by that is, a lot of times people put together a plan and they take years to put this plan together. They want to be absolutely perfect. And quite frankly, no plan is perfect. You still have to adjust on the fly. So my philosophy is more, hey, let's get it 80% right. Let's move and let's have the right team on it and let's adjust on the fly and get it done. So for me, anything we do, it's speed over perfection. The next thing is, you know, you can't be afraid to take risks. If you look at any one of these companies that we're buying, you can always find an excuse why not to do it, whether it be high customer concentration, the risk of an economic crisis. I mean, there are many, many reasons you can find not to buy a company. The job for us is to find a reason why. And quite frankly, some of the more, I don't want to say concerning is the wrong word, right word, but some of the riskier acquisitions that we look at turn out to be the best.
You have a stated goal, you've said, to become a billion-dollar company while remaining both nimble and innovative. Do you have a time frame for that goal, and do you feel that you are on track?
I do. So we are 500 million plus now. We should be approaching 700 million at the end of the year with our new year goal. And then probably another 12 to 18 months from there, we should be at $1 billion.
And how as a billion-dollar company do you remain nimble and innovative?
Well, you do it by, one, again, we're set up in three separate divisions to give them that flexibility. But it's by pushing decision-making down to the lowest levels in the organization and not creating bureaucracy. So the way I look at the corporate team is our job is to provide the tools and the process to enable the teams to operate as one. Now, their strategies at the local market level or where they operate are what sets them apart. And that's where they kind of get the chance to do their own work rather than us dictate how they're going to operate. So it's a really fine line between putting the tools, process, and technology in place and allowing them to make the decisions they need to be nimble. So again, it is a very fine line. And like I said, I've seen it work in a bunch of different ways, and we're gonna make sure we do it the right way. And I think if you talk to any of the business unit presidents, they'll tell you that we've enabled them to be nimble and get stuff done at the same time, putting in the right tools where we can be efficient and have shared services.
To talk just briefly, you know, you've brought in so many different companies in a very, very short period of time. You know, how does that impact the Pavion culture, and how is it different here than maybe other places that you have worked or maybe your employees have talked to about working? And what do you bring to that as a CEO?
I think what I bring is teamwork. I think, I bring empowerment to be able to make the decision, because to me, that's probably one of the most important things to employee satisfaction, that they feel empowered to make the decisions they need to do their job effectively. And that's probably one of the number one things that I can do or I can crush if I don't give them that ability. And that's what I think enables us to be nimble and effective. Again, my job is to support the team. I work for the team in the field, and my job is to break down barriers for them, whether it's to help them get some of these complicated M&A deals across the goal line, whether that's to share some strategy or best practices that I'm aware of. Whatever it happens to be, my job is to support them and the customers and make sure they're set up to succeed.
So I know that when you came into this, COVID was already going on. So, you know, you have not been here since the start of that with Pavion, but what have you seen, at least since you came in terms of the biggest challenges that it has brought to your company and to the security industry as a whole?
So I'll be honest here, this is probably I've been in the business for over 30 years, and this is probably the most challenging time. I've managed through recessions and other issues, but this is probably the most challenging time any of us have ever operated in, because you're getting hit from all angles. You have supply chain issues. You have incredible price pressure at a moment's notice. You have employee shortages. You have an aging technician workforce. And because of especially the product supply issues, you have inefficiencies in your business. And what I mean by that is when you estimate a job, a security job or fire job or whatever it happens to be, you estimate that job, you order the material, you're going to be on site for a month or 2 months, whatever it takes to do the installation, then you're going to finish it and you're going to move off. Now the challenge becomes, because you have timelines and deadlines, you only get a quarter of that product in. So you got to send your crew out there to do a quarter of it. Then you got to wait for the rest of it to come in, the next quarter, the next third, whatever it is. And these jobs that you were completing, you know, in one, you know, fell swoop, you know, in a consistent fashion, now you're going back multiple times. And any one of us knows when you're doing something and you have to start and stop and start and stop, it is not as efficient at all. So managing through those challenges. So I would say, you know, the stress that it's put on our employees and all these organizations is just incredible. So, I mean, it is a very difficult environment. Anybody who tells you it's not that is not telling you the truth.
So what have you done to kind of help alleviate these issues while where you can or be as successful as you can in this challenging environment?
Well, one of the critical things we did was we put in place a professional procurement department to help us negotiate with suppliers, help us move product back and forth between the businesses, help us source alternate products that meet the same specifications. So that's probably been the most important thing that we've done, as well as provide our project managers with training on how to deal with these environments, how to secure change orders based on changes in working conditions. So I would say it's procurement and providing the proper training to the employees to be able to cope with this environment.
Everything that's gone on in the last year in the world, not just with your company, what are some of the changes that you think are permanent to both the way that you do business and the way that your and your customer expectations?
Well, I think customers are expecting a lot more automation. I think customers want to have you always have to have live agents to help customers. So you have to have that. You can't automate everything. But I do think a lot of customers want to have access to self-service tools on top of the live agents. So I think customers want to have their data available to them and be able to make changes and do things, whether even AR or, you know, be able to see their invoices themselves and manage it electronically. So that's kind of number one. But I want to be careful with that because, again, a lot of people want that. But we're never going to shortchange having live agents to speak to. Because I can tell you personally, the most frustrating thing for me can be when I call, when I need help with something, and they tell me there's a 2-hour hold time or there's an hour hold time, right? We don't want to be there. So it's about both. You got to have more self-service tools because there's a lot of users that want to use self-service tools, especially the younger generation. And sometimes you need to talk to somebody. So I want to make sure people can get to a live body when they can in a very short period of time. The second thing that I think is changing as well, and we've seen it, is just being able to work remotely. A lot of folks do not want to work, you know, 5 days a week in the office. So we have to find that right balance because coming to the office is important. It's important to learn. It's important for those water cooler conversations to grow. So being in the office is very important and feeling part of the team. But I do think we have to be flexible and make sure that we do have some hybrid environments where we can accommodate people who don't want to be in the office every day.
Where in terms of the integrator's role in all of this, or just, you know, within the security space, you know, what is your, you know, goal for the integration community at large? You know, where would you like to see things be in 5 years?
Well, I would like to see us continue to push the new technologies. I think I would like to see the integrated community be more automated in how we take care of our customers. The one thing that's really good about the security space is there is a lot of integration, unlike some other technologies. I mean, where you can integrate multiple types of systems, multiple types of technologies. So I think that's critical. I think security has done probably the best job of any of the fields in being able to share different products and services between the different manufacturers.
What do you see as the biggest challenge ahead for integrators such as yourself?
I would say one of the key things for integrators is how to sell more service. Because one of the issues you have with integration is okay, you make the sale, but now how do you structure the right type of service contract for the customer to meet their needs? Because one of the things I see, it's unfortunate in the security industry, because it's not like regulated by code like fire, is someone will put in, you know, a $200,000 security system or camera system, and they don't sign up for a maintenance program. And you know what? It's great, but then unfortunately, if you don't maintain that properly, then you have an incident and you could have a camera that's dirty. You can have a camera that's not working. You can have issues in the system. So it's really making sure customers understand the importance of maintenance contracts around this. And then not only just your traditional maintenance contracts, is how do we lump in cyber to make sure the system's protected properly? How do we, you know, put in the remote resolution so we take care of, you know, problems before they even happen, right? That's the technology today, a lot of it has the ability to kind of give you a heads up, hey, something's going wrong here, you know, and give you time to react and fix it before the customer even knows there was a problem. So that to me is probably one of the most important things, is making sure customers understand how important service is, and then being able to structure the right service level contracts for every customer, because everybody's different.